Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse Session 63. Yeah, I think so. Your host and program director here, James J. Maloff, with my partner in art, our head of production and sound, Seth Habhager.
Well, we have, you know, we do many things here on Director's Playhouse. We look at all the arts. But recently we got to talk to Nathan, another filmmaker who's won some awards. And thanks to Nathan, we got another person, a local filmmaker right here from Wisconsin Rapids that also won a recent award. So we're going to talk to him today.
We welcome to the WFHR stage actor, filmmaker, creative in Wisconsin's own Sawyer Wideman. Sawyer, good to have you with us.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Appreciate the time, man. And I just want to say right out the gate, I really am enjoying your story. What I've gotten to see, I'm going to be following you throughout. I was a young kid myself, falling in love with acting. And I don't. We're going to find out your origin story in seconds here. But I just want to make a guess that you are similar, that you fell in love with acting or creative or just entertaining at a young age. Let's get right into it, man. What is your origin story? Give us a little bit of your beginnings.
Yeah, I think from a young age, I was always playing outside with either my sister or my friends or neighbors, and creating these little games. And I think that's where I really fell in love with storytelling. I think it's very important to have that experience at such a young age. I think it helps shape how you see the world. And it really helped when I started falling in love with film even more, and seeing all these different ways you can tell a story and be creative and express yourself. Whether that's through the cinematography, the score, directing, acting, whatever it might be. For a very long time, I was definitely on a different path. I wanted to be a calculus professor, which is kind of totally on the other side of the spectrum. But then ninth grade geometry happened, and I did not like geometry. So I took a test one day, did not do well on the test, and I thought to myself, okay, this is not going to work out. What's the next thing I can do? And I went to bed that night, and I was like, you know, I really like movies. Maybe I want to direct or write one. And then I switched over in a course of 24 hours. I'm graduated from college already. I'm a year out. And I guess I'm a director and filmmaker of sorts.
You sure are. Bona fide, I think. There every kid plays pretend. Just some take it a little more serious than others, you know? I had a feeling. It's really cool to hear. And now, anywhere, if you were from anywhere, I would think you would have a very cool story. But certainly, we're doing this show right here in Rapids, and we have a local tie to it with that. So I think it's not only that much more unique, but that much more noteworthy, because one of the things we like to do with this show, Sawyer, is certainly highlight and bring attention to locals and local creatives and, support their art, artists supporting artists. But the other side story, side quest of this show is encouraging other creatives out there to be the next Sawyer, to be the next this, to be able to do these things themselves. We are big believers that there can never be enough art, there can never be enough creatives out there. So I want to get into some other stuff with you a little bit later about that. But for now, just sticking with you right now, do you remember your first role?
Oh, gosh. I was active within the theater department at Lincoln High School, whether that was I did some acting, mainly crew tech stuff. I think my first role was for, they were doing the musical Mary Poppins. I was on the crew, and I was told to make some kites. So that was my main job throughout that, and it was so exciting just to even make something so small and just seeing that within the production. And that was just, I just think about that time a lot and how it was a great experience, and it really opened me up to the world of being an artist and being a creative.
Shout out to Lincoln High School, also a graduate of Lincoln myself. Any chance to shout that out, we will do it. That's really cool to know, and really interesting when you consider what you've done. And you're so early in your career here and everything, but what you've already accomplished. What you're talking about, you didn't go directly to the role or to the acting, but you talked about other parts of performing and what it takes to put on a production. Being behind the scenes, when I'm teaching or I'm talking to young actors or comedians or anything, the first thing I tell them is reps. There are no roles to turn down. Work as much as possible. It's how you get good at this. You get more comfortable with it. The very next thing I will suggest is work behind the scenes. Do props. Work the curtain. Whatever it might be, do as many different roles as you can backstage. It makes you that much stronger and that much better on stage. When it comes to filmmaking, I got to think that that's all times 10.
Yeah, it kind of is. At least from my experience, how I started, right away, if you know you want to be a director, you're going to get some light training of like, okay, this is every basic of how to make a film. This is how you set up a camera. This is how you start to work with actors, think about lighting, think about sound, stuff like that. But as I continued on, rather than just sticking straight with only directing classes or only writing classes, I took many courses to learn about all the smaller stuff, like lighting. That was one of my favorite classes from my sophomore year. Casting has become a really fun thing for me. I really enjoy working with actors and finding them, and then script supervising, continuity. That is incredibly important and so overlooked. And it's one of the most difficult jobs, but it's also so fun because you just notice all these small things that you wouldn't know before. So I think in order to make a film, you need to understand or at least have some experience in all other levels. And then you'll get this really strong appreciation while you're on set of directing or whatever you're doing, and just being like, wow, we're here making a film and you're seeing all these moving parts, and it's just this really amazing thing.
Is it very well said? Isn't it interesting? So many of us that like storytelling, whether it's writing a short story, a novel, or a script, a TV show, movie, whatever, that we are so locked in on the story part, we don't always focus on the telling and how to tell that story. And I think that is, I don't think, I know it's my most difficult part of anything. I can have a wonderful idea in my head, how to tell Seth it. I don't understand. I'm lucky that he understands my brain pretty well. It's difficult to be able to get that out. And it seems like one of the more consistent things with good directing is, when I was young, I thought it was good directors always were their own editors, or at least in the editing room. The more older I get, I hear it in you, Sawyer, lighting, how much that comes into play and how much good directors not only love and enjoy that part of it, but focus on that part of it. I think that's really interesting you brought that up. Mm-hmm. It's not something when I was a kid wanting to tell stories I thought about. You know, it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Even just going off with lighting, with our cinematographer, Evan Thompson, he worked with our gaffer, that's the person who does the lighting, Sophie. Those two, it was amazing working with them because I've never had an experience like this before where we're going through a shot list and just, you know, imagining how we have to set up this film and how we're going to portray every single scene, every detail. And we were on the page, on the same page, literally the whole time. And they really understood where my brain and mind was at, and I understood theirs. And it's this amazing little relationship that we all had. And I think we created some really beautiful shots, and they weren't just beautiful because they look pretty, but because they have meaning. And it kind of goes back to understanding every small detail and every person on the crew, what they're doing. And you just see these pictures and images unfold before you and you realize that you are making something special.
There's really nothing like that. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was curious, Sawyer, what were some of your influences, whether they're early or current? What are some of your bigger influences?
Oh, yeah. So at least for this film and kind of altogether with any film that I make or work on, I am very, very interested in slow-moving parts, especially the slow cinema. Over the years, especially within the past 5 years, I've taken a strong liking to quieter films and some that people might say are like, they're just artistic. It's not like a popcorn movie or something like that. But I just like looking at these small moments within these characters' lives. And it might not be the biggest story. There might not be any action or even talking at all, but it's just quiet and it's personal. So for at least this film, some of those inspirations were After Sun by Charlotte Wells, Sweetie by Jane Campion, Columbus by Coconata, and basically any Kelly Reichardt film. I think those filmmakers and those films, they had just a beautiful eye on capturing life and these moments within these characters' lives. And they're really beautiful and subtle, and that's something that I'm very drawn to.
It's a really cool aspect of filmmaking, and it's something I grew up, my pop and my grandpa had me watching Charlie Chaplin movies and silent films a lot, and I find myself, I'm a sucker for a good action movie, and I will sit there and enjoy it and eat my popcorn and everything, and I know immediately afterwards I need something like that. I need a palate cleanser, if you will. I need something like The Gold Rush or Modern Times or even A Trip to the Moon or something like that.
Very good.
I don't know that that's necessarily what you mean by quiet films, but for me, immediately my brain went there to that, in part because it puts such a more focus on the other aspects of it. It's like they, you know, you hear people talk about with their senses and they lose one sense and the other strengthened.
Right.
I really do think that art is like that, where when it's a silent film, you're able to focus on this or vice versa.
I know a couple of filmmakers that I really like that are in that vein, that genre. Guy Madden, a Canadian filmmaker who has made several films that tend to be like really quiet, very little dialogue and that sort of thing. One of my all-time favorite movies is a German film called Schulze Gets the Blues. Mm. And it's another one of those very quiet, there's not a lot of dialogue. And it's basically the story of a retired German factory worker who plays the accordion for fun. And one night he hears Zydeco music. And it changes his life.
Whoa.
Because he wants to start playing it.
Huh.
So I'm really appreciating Sawyer talking about those kinds of films, because there's something very, and yeah, they may feel more artistic, more arty, but for me, I think there's something that's missing for being a sound guy, you know, still there's something missing about those quiet movies that kind of explore these other realms, as it were.
It's you know, it's funny too, because you and I were touching on this a little bit before about theater, and when we learned, or when we had a director teach us, that it's okay to be quiet on stage sometimes. And sometimes silence is the best dialogue. I would have never guessed that when I was young, starting out or anything, and realizing more and more as you get older and older, sometimes that's the best moments, when you take that pause. It really is. It's so many parts of it. That's really interesting. We are speaking with Sawyer Wideman right now, and as a interviewer, I did a horrible job in not mentioning this sooner. He is a Golden Badger Award winner. I should be mentioning that every 10 seconds. I'm going to put a timer here just to make sure I do from that. No, that is really cool, man. Congratulations on the award, the Golden Badger Award. Would you mind first letting people know that may not know what that award is and why it's handed out, when it's handed out, and then we'll kind of get into how you won, why you won the award.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. But yeah, the Golden Badger Award is given out at the Wisconsin Film Festival, which takes place in April yearly. And every year they give out three of these to filmmakers that are playing their film within the festival. They're all Wisconsin filmmakers, whether it's a short, feature length, documentary, narrative, doesn't matter. But from what I understand, and I sort of remove myself from this when I think about, like, oh, why did I win this? There's so many great films. But it's something where they choose these films because they see something special or something unique that they haven't seen before, or an emerging voice within the community of filmmaking in Wisconsin. So that's why I think I might have won, but I don't know. It was a big surprise. I got an email on my way to work saying that I won the award, and I was like, well, the festival hasn't even happened yet, so this is kind of a joke. And then I waited a day, and then I emailed back and was like, are you sure? And they were like, yes. And I was like, okay. So that was my whole experience with winning that award. It was very cool going up on stage and making a small speech and not knowing exactly what I was saying and couldn't even see the audience. It was kind of a blur for a good 2 minutes. But yeah, it's really amazing to be recognized as a filmmaker within your home state, especially Wisconsin, just because we live in a place where it's almost like the arts aren't necessarily recognized quite as much. Usually we see that more in bigger cities or other states, but in Wisconsin, we live such a quiet life where it seems that being a filmmaker, that's a far off dream, and something that you can't have, but you can have that, and you can work towards that, and this can happen.
We mention any chance we get, or I try to, that Wisconsin finished dead last in the funding the arts in the last year. And I think that's important to note. And part of the reason why we're talking with Sawyer, and we're having such a good time doing so. We're going to get more into the film and some of the other factors of how it was made and some of that with Sawyer when we come back here on Director's Playhouse. Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Playhouse. Seth and James here with you. We're joined by Sawyer Weidman right now and talking a little bit about his film. And Sawyer, can you tell us a little bit about the film?
Yeah, so Adagio is the story of Iris. She's a teenage girl who recently lost her brother, and it's the story of how she must find healing by recounting memories of music in origami, which is sort of a strange combination of things. So the idea was to explore how we turn our grief into art. So for the character Iris, she spends her time holding these origami frogs. And for her brother Daniel, when we do see him in the few scenes that he is in the film, it's playing his cello and his love for music. This story was very special for me to direct. So when I was in high school, still not sure what I wanted to do when I was older, because obviously geometry did not help my dreams of becoming a calculus professor. My sister, she was in one of these creative writing classes, and she wrote this story about this character, Iris. And I really loved this story, and I was on my way out of the door going to school one day, and I was thinking about filmmaking a little bit at that time. And I was like, hey, if I ever decide to make a film someday, I'm going to make this one. And she said, okay. And then we moved on with our lives. But then here we are now. This is my first bigger film, and I made that dream kind of come true. So it was very, very cool to do this.
That's incredibly
great
cool.
Story.
That's
yeah.
really good. The story of it is just as cool as the story
Very
itself.
Nice.
That's wonderful, man. And congratulations.
Yes, you know, that's really cool.
The award is one thing, but just accomplishing this, congratulations. That is really cool. That is really amazing and inspiring. You know, not just to
Absolutely.
Us, but to others, I imagine out there. I want to get into how the film was made in a second and everything, but before we do, whether it's getting this accomplished or the Golden Badger Award, Have these things motivated you?
Yeah, I would say so. I think recognition motivates you at least a little bit for me. It's great to have that, but honestly, it's just accomplishing the film, seeing what you made with all these other people, that really got me thinking, like, okay, this is something that I do want to do. And this wasn't just 4 years of my life at school just to make this one film and then move on to something else. I think when you make something and you're proud of it, that's all you need. That's really all you need.
There's something about creativity and can feel so good and accomplished. And when you finish something or do something, whatever it might be, and I've talked to poets, I've talked to comedians, I've talked to actors about this, and they all get, most of them, I should say, come back to the same thing of they finish something and that just makes them that much more hungry, that much more want to do more. I think there's something to be said for that. And I think that we get so locked in on the end, the finish line and accomplishing something that sometimes we miss some of the journey, and most people understand that. But the next story is so interesting and so pulling to it and everything. And I think that that's a big factor in whether or not, hey, this is something fun to do, or hey, this is my life. This is a part of who I am. That motivating factor where you can feel like, oh, you've won all these awards. Tom Hanks, I think, is a fantastic example of this. There is not much that man hasn't done. And yet he's constantly pushing himself. He just got done doing the America's thing because he hadn't done anything like that and wanted to do it. He didn't need to do that. His legacy's set.
Right.
Tom Hanks doesn't have to do a darn thing the rest of his life. But as a creative, as somebody who just loves what he does, he's constantly motivated to push himself and do new things. That's, to me, I think, the part of the gig of being a creative. I think a lot of people have an idea here or there or anything. It's those of us that want to do this that don't even have a choice. We have to do this. How did you get to this point? How did you get this film made, necessarily? Kind of getting into some of that, if you don't mind, Azwar.
Yeah, so this film was part of my thesis at Columbia College Chicago. So how that program was set up was, this would have been my second semester of my junior year. We start this BFA thesis class, and we pitch these ideas to the faculty to see, all right, which, because there's so many kids within this program, so many directors, so many writers, but you can only make so many films. So I had basic ideas of what I wanted my sister's story to be like if it was a film. And I worked a little bit on just a basic draft of the script, made some storyboards, made a pitch deck, stuff like that. And I pitched that to our faculty. They really liked that and selected this as one of the films that they were going to make, and that I was going to direct and produce and co-write and all of that. But then from there, you're put into the world of filmmaking. You have to assemble a team, find all these other people for these jobs, not just within this specific class, but within the community of this college. So I found some really great friends and new people to jump on board who not only just wanted to work on this film, but wanted to actually be part of telling this story. And from there, it was the next, I don't know how many months. We were in pre-production for maybe 9 months because of the summer gap over between semesters. And then we shot within 4 days. And then from there, we edited. We were in post-production. And then finally, you know, you finish the film and then you start submitting to festivals. And that's kind of where it goes from there.
Oh, so wow. It's not that hard. Oh, it seems really easy. Oh, that's all it is. No, that is awesome, man.
That's really cool. Yeah, love it.
And it's something, I don't know, I haven't been a part of that much stuff, but the TV movies that I've done and everything, what little I've been able to be on the set of and everything, it's always staggering to me of how little time, really in the scheme of things, you spend actually filming the work or anything. It's so much more of the post stuff that's done,
right.
that where the real time and effort is put in.
Yeah, being on set, time flies so fast. No matter how you schedule, there's never going to be enough time to get every single thing that you want to get. You have to cut some shots. You have to change little things, sometimes big things if you're really that behind. But I think that challenge of time really helps motivate you. It really helps bring out your creative side and be like, okay, I can't do both of these things. How can I combine this into one thing and make it even better? And that's where you get some of the best moments, whether creating shots, working with actors, literally anything. I love it. I love how there's this stress of, okay, we have to get this all done. And you worry on set, like, oh, is this even going to work? Is this film even going to work out in the end? But there's a point where you just have to let that go, and you just realize, okay, you're just making a film, you're making what you want to do, and that's enough.
Yeah.
And that's great.
When you, like you were talking about having to film, or not having to, but filming on the particular campus and all these things, so you're bringing in people and resources from there, which creates its own kind of positives and negatives, and that you have to work around with the film. And that part is just as interesting, too, about this process. And to your point, I just find all the factors that go into making these things, just every part of it has a unique story to it.
It's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and with this film, we actually did shoot it on film, which created a whole nother challenge.
Wow.
So, I mean, these days, most people, they've switched to digital, and on campuses, within their courses, they only teach digital. There's not much for shooting on physical film anymore, so... That was a big challenge for us. I knew from the beginning I really wanted to work on film. And I was told, okay, you've never worked on film. That's going to cost a lot more money. I've got to work with all these different factors. I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that. I said, okay, watch me do that. So then I created a whole team of people who were very enthusiastic. We got them to get this experience of actually working with film, and it turned out absolutely wonderful. I love 16 millimeter film. It feels dreamy and sort of, I don't know, there's something about it that I just love, and I think it works perfectly with the film and how it's very up close and personal and sort of surreal, and it was just absolutely wonderful to have that experience.
Sawyer, is there are there ways people can take in the film and watch it?
Right now, to view Adagio, so it's not out publicly, but we are in our festival run. It will actually be playing at the Austin International Film Festival this upcoming week. I think that's actually in a few days now. You can watch it online between May 17th through the 25th if you go onto AustinInternationalFilmFestival.com. That's where you can get some tickets, and you'll be able to view not only Adagio, but you'll also be able to see all these other wonderful films selected. And yeah.
I don't like recommending things very often. I highly recommend this, everybody.
Yes.
It's not only a great way to support a local, to support the arts, but it is a really, really good watch. It's very, very much worth the time. I encourage you to do so. Just a couple more questions for you, man. And these are all the tough ones. I always love asking creatives this. And so just a couple of quick ones. Do you have any other creative outlets outside of writing, acting, that sort of thing? Do you like to paint? Do you knitter? You play in sports? What do you do?
My favorite pastime, which I do get made fun of a lot for this, is I like walking for hours on end and just listening to music until like my headphones die or my phone dies. I like to walk until I'm lost, and then I have to figure out how to get back.
I love
that's
this.
One of my favorite things I've done in the past year. So
Interesting hobby, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I think I do a version of that. Mm-hmm. I just, the older I get, the less time I have to listen to music. So I feel like I have to almost remove myself from my life in order to be able to listen to an album or something like that.
Well, he's got a clock. Here's your idea. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, man, that's great. I'm writing this one down.
Wander out and find out things. Mm-hmm. I know right now, Sawyer, you are very focused on the circuit, you know, the film festival, all doing that right now. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you want to start working on when all this is said and done, when all the hoopla has fades for this one? What are you looking at doing next?
I definitely want to make another short sometime soon. I try to write every single day, whether it's just a couple words or a script or something else, but I would like to turn one of my writings into a short film. I have 2 Super 8 cameras now, so I'm testing them out, just seeing how the images turn out and processing and all of that. But I would love to shoot on film again, make something personal, something beautiful, and something that resonates with other people.
Excellent. Wow.
It's a great answer. Very well said. Mm-hmm. And I feel guilty because really the only reason I had Seth ask that is for acting jobs. we're just hoping for more. No. That's really cool. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's something about 8mm. There's something about that is just really everything you were saying about it, mm-hmm. I agree with.
Yeah.
And our final question for you, Sawyer, and this is the toughest one. It really is.
For sure.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think it would be Chopin.
Nice.
I love his music. I think all of his nocturnes are brilliant, and I just like want to know how somebody could compose all of these different pieces and just know how it sounds in their head and just all of that. I think musicians are just incredibly interesting, and I would love to just pick his brain.
That's a great answer.
So when the Chopin biopic comes out, we'll know who directed it.
Yep,
and we'll know.
Exactly.
Sawyer's on his way.
Thank you so much for the time, man. If people want to reach out to you, if people want to find out more about your work or anything, what's a great way to reach out to you?
At least for this film, and I run these accounts, so I'll be able to see any message if it's for me or any other people who worked on this film. Our Instagram page is at adagio.film, or you can find us on Facebook at Adagio Film.
I got to warn you, this isn't the last time you'll be with us. You're coming back sometime, especially any future projects you have.
Absolutely.
You come on back and bring them to us, and we'll help you talk and promote them, man, because this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for joining us, Sawyer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening out there. We appreciate the best listeners in radio. We'll be back with more Director's Cut. Or Playhouse. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Director's Playhouse. Seth and James here with you. As we're wrapping up the show, whenever we have this little bit of free time, we like to kind of focus on topics that are just fun and interesting that have to do with entertainment.
Yes.
And
yes,
I think I've come across one of our better ones, man.
Okay.
What's something that happens often in movies that is 100% unrealistic?
What? Unrealistic things happen in movies, James? What are you telling me?
These are not documentaries? This is the first I'm learning of it, too, Seth. I am as shocked as you, and I can only imagine our listeners are.
Yeah, what?
But I think one of the go-tos is somebody calling, and the phone rings once or twice, and then they pick up.
Yeah. Always.
Always.
Well, there's one exception. So, and if plot-wise, if they can't find them, then they will not pick up, you know, ring. Where are they? We got to go find them.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a good example. And here are some others, like somebody falls and catches the edge of something hanging on by just their fingers.
I mean, no.
Never.
Seriously.
I have fallen a lot, and I will tell you, even with my gigantic literal condor wingspan and gigantic hands, no. No, it doesn't happen.
No, how it's so, I mean, I get it, you know, and part of this is, you know, you got to suspend your disbelief and all that. That's what movies, that's what makes them fun, right?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
you don't have to buy every single thing.
Nobody
they
ever
do.
Reloads in an action movie. No, nobody. There's got an endless, you know,
supply of bullets. Yeah, yeah. They're always there. But the idea of someone like falling any distance and like grabbing onto the side of the cliff with their fingers, I mean, even in desperation, physics.
And you unless
know.
You are born with grappling hooks for hands.
Or Spider-Man.
Or Spider-Man. One or the other. No, it doesn't happen. No. I'm pretty unrealistic on that one. Spotless air ducts, or air ducts that can support the weight of a 200-pound person.
Oh, seriously.
Along with not only John McCain, but his gun and like other things and stuff. Like, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Those things are not built well. Don't try that at home.
There's no ductwork on the planet that's that strong. Seriously. Oh, my God. I know. I get it. You know, it's the surprise. This is the way we can sneak around into buildings and no one will see us, right? But, yeah.
Doesn't really work.
It doesn't.
Now, this one, there are. This is a fun list, and usually they don't upset me. I don't know why, but this one is, well, I guess I do. This one has always bothered me.
All right.
People getting pistol-whipped, being knocked unconscious, and waking up later functionally normal as if nothing happened. And the first, to yeah. add on to that, the one-hit, pistol-whip, which nobody in human history has ever done or been able to do.
No.
Now, I would believe the throwing the gun or something like that, mm-hmm. and just by chance knocking them out, like you're not even trying to. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that this has ever actually really happened.
We could probably get into a whole thing, and maybe there might be some more gun stuff in this. I don't know, a whole about guns and how they are in real life as compared to guns as they are in movies, because the very big difference there. But you know, the idea that you know exactly where to hit someone to knock them out unconscious. Well, okay, guns are heavy. They're metal, man. Yeah. They're going to leave a mark.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking split open, blood. We're talking,
there's no getting around it.
No. So, but yeah, people wake up, but they don't have a gouge out of their skull, right?
A character moving 4 feet from the other character and having a full volume conversation that no one else could hear. This may be the biggest one that we're asked to suspend belief for.
Right, yeah. They're not even leaning in. They're just kind of... Hey, the worst stage whisper ever. Yeah,
my favorite is not, and it's funny you bring up theater because mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit easier to suspend belief in theater. I don't know why, but I feel like it is.
That probably is. Yeah.
In my head, I would think it would be the opposite, but it actually is that way. It mm-hmm. kind of seems to go that way at least. With this, it's only more frustrating for me. It happens more in TV where the person will just turn. They just move to the other side and do this. And like, they can hear you, you know, they could, no.
And with you could get around that in movies and TV. You could do this thing called a close up where you literally can just whisper in their ear.
Yes.
Right. But they don't use it enough. Maybe. I don't know.
Waking up looking fresh and styled and mostly in a very good mood. I'm pretty sure, and I have done a little homework on this, mm-hmm. nobody in history has ever done that. No, nobody has ever woken up. No, I'm sure it's happened a little bit.
So this is truly egregious in like old movies where you have women waking up, full makeup. Their lips are ruby red. Mm. Their hair is done perfectly. And they get out of bed like they've slept all night. First of all, how's there not like lipstick stains all over their pillow, first of all? But I mean, and they look just glamorous and gorgeous. And they're, come on. Even back then, they've got it. People were probably like,
yeah,
something wrong with this. This doesn't look right.
It's there's suspending belief, and mm-hmm. then there's just kind of like, well, I can't wrap my brain around
a little
that.
Bit too far.
It
right?
is kind of funny to think of, but that is more unrealistic than some of the science fiction
Absolutely.
You've seen in your life.
Yeah, even when someone's supposed to get like be drunk, like hungover, they still look fine basically when they wake up. Like they have their shirt untucked a little bit. Yeah, you know, that's it, right?
And it's funny because they've quote unquote improved this, but it still hasn't really gotten to realistic.
Because and you know, to be fair, you know, to filmmakers, I mean, you have to compose shots in a certain way, mm-hmm. and you can't. Sometimes you just can't do it the way maybe that looks the most realistic because that's what you got to work with, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Hackers saying, typing 300 words per minute, and then 5 seconds later saying, I'm in. Like, yeah. I love that in every scene, and it's so unrealistic.
once again, to be fair to filmmakers, how do you dramatically do someone typing? Seriously, it's so hard. I mean, I get it. It's totally unbelievable. Yeah. 300 words per minute. It's amazing.
I make this joke all the time, but I actually give like the CSI franchise mm-hmm. a lot of credit for this of like, well, how do we make medical, you know, them using yes. beakers and stuff and make yes. this interesting techno, just techno music. That's it. That's it. We're just going to throw techno music on it.
Yeah.
Like, we have no dialogue. Techno. That's yeah. what we'll do. They took the Michael Bay kind of form of, yeah. of movie making into TV and yeah, stuff.
We'll just do a little hand waving and we're good.
And
right?
it kind of works.
It does.
It kind of works a little bit. Yeah. This is maybe my favorite one. No one ever looking for parking. It's just there.
Oh, that is so not fair.
That's so not fair.
I want to see one movie. You know, one non-comedy movie. Okay. Because you can get some comedy out of not finding a parking spot. I can see that. Okay. But like a dramatic movie where think you could actually do this as a suspenseful thing, mm-hmm. man. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, I got to get into the building by this time of oh, no, I can't find any parking.
I want to make a short film that is just about that. Just about
Dude,
looking for parking.
Oh, that would be a brilliant. Oh, that would be fun.
It might
oh,
be something great. Nobody's ever done. I'm no, just saying I this off the top of my head. That it actually might be. We may have stumbled across the one movie idea that hasn't been done.
Be interesting.
The classic zoom in, enhance the image, isolate that section, enhance it more. Nobody's got that tech, man.
No, we don't.
We all have Zoom on our things, and that's about it.
that's all we you got. Know. I don't care who you are, man. You could be the government agency with unlimited funding, and you do not have the tech that good.
The technology really doesn't even exist, but it's awfully cool in a show.
It does look cool, yeah. and it adds to that. Again, a suspense thing, you know, like boom, boom, you know, the zoom in.
They tell you this without telling you this, because every time this happens in a movie or a TV show, it's always that rogue group of people.
Yes.
It's always a rogue group.
Yes.
They are able to do this because it doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And someone said brushing teeth without toothpaste. Yeah, I guess that does happen a lot in movies and TV shows, because you do see people brush, but you don't see them often putting the toothpaste
no,
on.
No, and I can understand that, because multiple takes, right? You know, it's like eating. It's like mm-hmm. one of the things I always, and I don't know, this is something I would add to the list. Why do they always, I thought of this for a long time, like, why do they always eat such small amounts?
Yeah.
Like they put like a little tiny bit of milk in the bottom of the glass. Mm-hmm. And that was always like, well, no one does that, right? And then I realized multiple takes.
Yeah.
They want to, fill up on milk while they have to do like 10 takes of them taking a sip, right?
Something that we experience in radio, too, I find even if I can save 1 or 2 seconds, that adds up and gives us more time for segments and those sorts of things.
Right.
I have no doubt that that is part of the filmmaking, too, is,
yeah.
Even those 3 seconds it takes to put on toothpaste sounds silly, but you add that up with taking away 3 here, 3 here, and you've
right.
got a couple extra minutes to play with. You can put in a new scene.
That's true.
I think there's a little
something
of that.
To have something with that, yeah.
To that, I think you have a little bit of this next one, ordering a meal, eating just one bite, and then chucking the whole thing in the garbage.
That's part of it too. Yeah, it's like, why aren't they eating? Well, again, multiple takes. They
yeah.
don't want to fill up while they're trying to act, right? Yeah.
And finally, God, this is good. The general lack of tiredness. It's pretty good, actually. It's pretty good.
I love that. Yeah, I've been up 48 hours. I've been awake. But I got to push through. Dude, if you're up for 40, I mean, I've pulled all-nighters. I know the way I feel in the morning. Not good. Feeling like junk, you know?
How about just your everyday characters complaining about being tired, like every single human being does on almost a daily basis?
Someone asks you, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm kind of tired, though, you know? Yeah, seriously, I want to see that in a movie where everyone says, like, oh, I'm tired. I've been working so hard.
It certainly wasn't the intention, but in doing this, Seth, I think we have come up with the most original movie idea of all time.
Maybe we have.
Where somebody looking for parking, they can't find it, so like, I'm hungry. They go and order and eat a full meal and then go look for parking and can't find it.
The most boring movie ever, but we will make it.
We're going to make it.
We're going to make it.
It's already been picked up by Netflix. It's already.
Ouch. Oh, that was a burn. That was a burn.
You can to Ask Reddit for this entire list. We've got pretty much all of them in there, but
those
there's
are
some
fun.
Other
yeah.
interesting ones in there, I think, that you might find. And I want to hear from everybody else out there, because I know that there's more meat on
Next
the bone with this
Next time you watch
one.
A movie, like take a mental note of like, wait a minute. People don't do that in real life. Come on.
I actually think The Matrix hit on one that used to bug me a lot with the whole reloading thing.
Yeah.
And I've noticed, and I can't speak to this other than just noticing and watching so much content of movies and TV shows and everything. I swear to you, since they did that, they kind of made the comment about that in The Matrix, the original Matrix movie, and we don't have to reload and all that stuff. You see it more. It's more of a much more common thing. I will say, long before that, the movie Heat, I thought did this to perfection.
Oh yeah,
actually, so much to the point. This came up recently with the passing of Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer was so good at reloading in that movie. They actually use it for like actual FBI training and stuff.
Seriously?
Yeah, you can look it up. It's a really cool thing to see. If you guys, Seth, I encourage you guys to look this up, because he was so humble and so embarrassed talking about it. Like, they actually asked his permission and Michael Mann's permission and stuff. And like, well, yeah, Michael Mann was all for it. And he reaches out to Val, and Val's like, get out of here. Like,
it's
no,
like, come on, no.
Like, he was really blown away by it. It's kind of cool.
That's really cool. How about that? Learn something new every day.
Thank you for joining us all for another great edition, and our guest, of course, for another great edition of Director's Playhouse.